We're now about to speak to Tony Craig.
Okay, good, that's all.
Right. Well, I mean, this is our last day and documentary, and it's very good, I think, that we've met you. You've got quite a memorable piece, in fact, down there on the steps to the park, which are a number of large vessels that appear to be made in iron that are rusting, but against that sort of distance and that landscape,
I certainly
found them very, very impressive. I mean, how do you feel about, you know, your works here in Documenta? Because you've got them both outside and inside, just as a general start.
How do I feel about my work?
Well, are you pleased about the context and about being in relation to this Documenta 8?
You know, I have an attitude anyway towards a group show where I feel completely unresponsible for anything that happens in it. I mean, I make very specifically my own work, have my own theme, which I decided upon a long time ago, how to deal with it, and try to just develop what I want to do, not looking left or right, or thinking about whether it's a good show or a bad show or whatever. So, I mean, one had a certain sort of premonition about what this Documenta might look like, and I think it's been confirmed in many ways. So, and obviously that's mainly in a negative sense. And so now, finally, the exhibition's here and you have the idea. I mean, you hear it behind every bush and every corner, it's a bad exhibition. And the only thing I'm glad about is that people recognise it's a bad exhibition, you know? Not because it's a bad exhibition, but it's a very problematic exhibition. Finally, you can see that art and design really don't belong together. They have nothing to do with each other. It's an idiot idea to try and put them together. Design is bound by functional, utilitarian criteria, and art has a spiritual, meaning, which is completely separate from design. So, I mean, to put them together is just a disaster. And but as I say, if people can turn around and they say it's bad, then it's great, because I don't know why they think it's bad, but I'm sure that they see it's a problem. Obviously, there are 120 artists, and 120 artists are walking around saying it's a terrible show, you know? So every single one of them feels that they are justified in their work, and that's their position, everything.
Right.
That I have to, I mean, I'm obviously a...
So, I mean, there just seems then to be a real dichotomy between what the curators and organisers of the exhibition set out to do in terms of a set of arguments and the way individual artists perceive the show.
But that's always the case, isn't it? I mean, but it's also... I think there are two other problems. First of all, that because of this the atmosphere in this year and last year, with this kind of postmodern background, that's what everyone talks about. I think it's a time where artists really have to work. I mean, everything that postmodern means, this kind of like this appearance of being this or that, appearance of being a Greek temple, the appearance of being an industrial machine, the appearance of being something useful. I mean, for me, postmodern is just about appearance. It's not of anything in depth, you know? And I think that artists are going to really have to concentrate on their own separate themes and personal ideas to work through what postmodern means, to be really specific, to identify with other things, you know? And so so that's one problem. And also the other problem is, of course, the motivation of... to take that to another point is that's the background, and I think that also makes it difficult to do big shows at the moment. They look to me like white elephants, the big shows. All the big shows I saw for the last year or two, they always look they look a little bit worn out and a little bit tired, and so what, you know? It's not at all like an erotic, sensitive sort of feeling about looking at enjoying or being stimulated. It's just like information.
Yeah, I suppose a large show such as a documenta, one comes to it with expectations. I mean, not only does one imagine that it will be a kind of a summation of recent history, but also it will, in a sense, point to something in the future. Or it will be at least a synthesis. But no one's actually talked about this show in those terms.
Well, because this exhibition, I mean, this is another thing, is that, you know, if you don't... there's a very strong generation of artists, I mean, art generation, above my, older than myself, or who were working before myself. And if you decide, if you make the decision to exclude those people, people like Richard Long, Carl André, Sol LeWitt, a lot of people, if you don't include them, and you want to concentrate your energy or focus on the new generation of artists, that's fine. But then you should really get a core of people you really feel are substantial, you know? I mean, not just try to invent some light-hearted, lightweight kind of atmosphere. Then you really... there are those people around. And then you have to build around the core of people that is something really substantial. I mean, I don't feel that I belong to one generation or the other, in fact. But I feel there is the kind of post... 1968 generation, if you like, has been really badly represented in this exhibition. But also, of course, it's two things, because they also represent themselves badly.
Right. Can I ask you something about the actual works that you've got in this show?
Yeah.
I saw the work you had on in the Haywood recently, and there is a piece which is fairly similar in terms of it being a number of vessels made out of iron.
Yeah.
But the difference that occurs to me here is that you've actually physically got things pouring out of them,
yeah,
whereas you didn't in the last one. Mm. What kind of reasons were there for introducing that almost sort of illustrative element, yeah, into the work?
Well, I think that, yeah, I don't know if it's illustrative, but it definitely has a more unsettling feeling about the work. What I wanted to do with the work is not just be left with a formal, a very formalistic proposal. I wanted one. I think I'm a little disturbed about the pouring myself, and I took it away at one time, and then I thought, very beautiful, very nice things. But again, this, I mean, the what I thought here with all these designed objects, I'd rather work away from that, you know? Even if it has runs the risk of being a bit anecdotal or of, you say, illustrative, that's the risk I'll take for something that's a little bit more complicated, has a little bit more complicated content involved with it, rather than a simple formalistic solution. And it was a way of taking a distance from what I suspected would be here.
Were you actually given those two sides to work with, or could you choose to do something outside and something inside as well?
Originally I was told very specifically I was going to work outside, and I thought about it, and I didn't like being told to work outside, but then I thought, well, I enjoy doing that very much recently, and so I go along with it. It's always something I find to be a great challenge. It is quite difficult to make a work outside. And I saw the architecture here when I visited, and I thought, right, definitely not inside. No cost inside, because I can't even... You have the... you're so confused by the terrible architecture of the building they've put in there that you're feeling sort of a bit out of balance before you even start to look at what's in the rooms, I feel. So they asked then afterwards if I would have a presence in the building. So I said, yes, okay, I'd make a work. But only if it's in real architecture. So the only real architecture which is left is in the hallways. So it's a small work with a real window behind it, with real light coming down it, and what is more or less, even if it is a lift or whatever, it's the architecture of the building, which is not a great building, but it's what it is.
I was just wondering, why did you choose to work and live in Germany now? Because you've left England, haven't you?
Yeah, I left England 10 years ago, but it's simply because my wife comes from Wuppertal, and we have two children, and that's it. It's a purely personal reason, private reason to stay there.
Right.
But I also enjoy it. I mean, I like very much to live here. Very much. I find it much easier to work in a town where you can move faster. You know where all the materials are. You can... to work in London is a real pain. I mean, to travel somewhere and you want to buy some things, you have to go across town and the traffic makes me ill. And I mean, it's just very practical, normal things. And I like towns which are hilly. Wuppertal is hilly.
You will be, in a sense, representing Britain at the next Venice Biennale. Have you been to Venice, to the pavilion? And do you have any ideas about what, in fact, you will do there and how you'll respond to that?
I've been there. I remember the pavilion from I think I've been visited the Biennale at two occasions, and I've had work in two Biennales, which weren't the same. So I know the pavilion. It's a very good building. I think it's one of the nicer pavilions in the Giardini, whatever it's called.
Yeah, sure.
And I'm looking forward to it. I've already started to work for it. I'm not going to have much of a program this year. I mean, if one can talk about a program, I've actually cancelled a lot of my plans. I just want to put a lot of effort very specifically into making something for that.
Something specifically for that.
Absolutely. Not specifically for the space. For the occasion, I make a specific work. That's the best way of putting it. Be three or four works, maybe, not very many.
That's great. Thanks.
And I'm standing just outside one of the rather small rooms that have been created on the staircase here in the Frederikianum, trying to get inside, although it's rather difficult because the whole place is packed out with laughing people. They're all watching a short film by the Swiss artists Fischli and Weiss called The Way Things Go. This is a kind of sequence made up by filming a number of Heath Robinson-like contraptions, all of which exist simply to project into the operation of the next one, so that one sees kettles shooting across tracks in order to puncture balloons, which then allow certain other things to fall into bowls of water, which then upset other things, which then fall into ladders, which then fall over and set tires rolling. And the whole thing is accompanied by a soundtrack which simply echoes the kinds of operations which are going on. It seems at first that the whole thing is simply done in one take, although every now and again you notice that there are very subtle edits in the sequence, so that the thing is probably actually the compilation of a whole series of different experiments then edited together. But it does seem to be amusing most of the visitors to Documenta this time.
Now back at the Frederikianum in the installation by Hans Hacker. Stuart Morgan, I've caught you on the wing. What do you think of this Documenta?
It's a big mess at the moment. The Frederikianum looks okay, but the rest looks terrible. It's like walking through a Japanese shopping mall, except it's not Japanese. People seem to be imitating a Japanese take on Western society. And why a Western person should imitate what Japanese people think of the West, I can't quite imagine.
What are you particularly referring to then?
Oh, all these hippy dippy videos that you see all over the place, which are installations, and they're mainly about water dripping. I've seen water dripping. Didn't come here to see water dripping.
Right. What about the design exhibits down at the Orangerie?
You mean why are they here?
Yeah, I mean, do you think
search me.
You don't think they fit into the central argument about
there isn't a central argument, and this is exactly the point. If you read the entire catalogue, the point seems to be that they don't want a documenta like Documenta 6, which they say was about art about itself. They don't want an exhibition like Documenta 7, which was, they say, art about artists, which was Rudy Fuchs's Documenta. What they want is art, they say, about a social context for art. And this is what the design is doing there and what the designs for museums are doing in the other place. In fact, there is no central argument, and the curators seem to me to be very distinguishable. I could probably tell you which of the curators picked each of the sets of pieces in the entire show.
Right. So, I mean, in an overall sense, here in the Fredericianum, you think this is a more coherent exhibition?
Much better. I like it very much.
Yeah.
Here. If you saw this first and thought this was the entire exhibition, you'd like it a lot.
Which pieces do you think really have impressed you here?
The difficulty is that single pieces are kind of compromised by other pieces. So I like this Hans Harker piece very much, but when you go to the Orangerie, you'll see a large work which contains a Mercedes-Benz car. This one has the rotating neon sign from Mercedes-Benz and is not compromised. When you see the other piece, which actually has a car in it, which is not a Mercedes-Benz car, it is a piece about a car, and you're told that the artist then received the car as a present from Mercedes-Benz afterwards, you wonder why Hans Harker was included here and whether they weren't using him to validate other more devious moves.
Now I've just walked into an installation called Niagara Falls by Shigeto Kabota, and it's essentially a cascade of water falling in front of a number of video screens which have an image of Niagara Falls actually on them, set at various angles, and the water is falling into a large tank that not only has about 8 inches of water, but also a number of pointed pieces of aluminium which reflect the imagery in a rather distorted way of the monitors that actually have the image of Niagara Falls on. So the cascade of water falls into a bath of water. Well, now along from the John Cage installation, the church, there's a large concrete enclosure within which there's a huge block of stone about 10 feet by 5 by, about 10 feet high by Ulrich Ruchrim. A few people here. What do you think of this piece? I mean, what do you think Ruchrim... What do you think of his intention is in making this work?
I think it's very marvelous here, and he always is looking for a piece who gives the imagination of
nature, but with a
thinking of something, not only imagination, it's more. It's something.
No, it almost has a sort of ritualistic quality, rather like an Egyptian pyramid or something. It has a powerful sense of being about something, some sort of symbolic.
Yes,
presence.
Symbolic. He's very sensible with his. What is this? It was a cut, you know.
Yes.
And he looks very strongly to the piece of stone, and he does things you never realized before with a stone. So yeah. The piece is something religious in a way as well, I would say.
Who?
Religious.
Releases. A religious. Religious.
Yeah, yeah, religious. No? Yes, some for meditation, you can yes. have meditations with this piece, especially in this quiet room here.
Yes.
In this.
Which is a sort of open air room, but
yeah.
this concrete sort of wall around it, too,
yeah.
about 10 feet high.
Yeah.
And the road, of course, as can be heard, is yeah. just outside.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a very powerful piece, isn't it? The
yeah,
weight seems to be
it
overwhelming.
Is. Yes. And if you look at that, it's a picture in a way as well, no?
Can I finally ask you, why are you here in Kassel? Are you here for Documenta?
Yes, I'm involved in the art market. I'm a gallerist.
Right. What do you think of the show, generally?
She is important. The show is important, I think. But this time it's... the main thing is sculpture. So, and I'm interested in paintings and drawings, so it's not really all the thing for me, you know. No, that's wrong English.
It's okay.
you have to translate it in a good English.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Well, finally, what are you from a gallery?
Düsseldorf.
Yeah, what is a gallery?
My gallery. The name?
Yes.
Ute Padun.
Right, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Martin Kunz, could I squeeze across the table? I mean, what is your feeling about Documenta 8?
I think it's perfect. It looks so clean. It's very well done. They put in a lot of thought, apparently, a lot of work. It's almost everything finished, and it's really like if you open a shop and everything is at the right position, and it's not nothing which disturbs and nothing really which makes you screaming at it. No, they didn't make any major evident mistake, but. Like such an interruption, there are no.
It's all right. It's okay. We're in a restaurant. I mean, are you saying then that you don't have any criticism whatsoever with the exhibition?
No, that's the main criticism. There starts the main criticism, I think, by trying to make it really perfect. They eliminated every life, and I was thinking there are many several possible reasons. It may be the installation, it may be this building suffered a first renovation which killed the original substance of the old architecture, and to cover this they installed a second provisional architecture. And maybe by taking off the original strength of an old Baroque building which suffered the war, which in the beginning of the first document has really served as an ideal space for artists, that this already killed the potential background. The second reason may be the art on its own, that they selected art and art, I wouldn't say just artists, but they selected in a way which the main idea was not an idea, but was wanted to make a point against wild painting, against the expressionist movement, against emotion, extrovert emotion. By that, they were choosing art which was much drier, which was, in their view, much more rational, much more intelligent, much more conceptual, and what they pretend also much more related to social issues. And for me, that's one of the main question marks in the whole thing, because I think it's a big misunderstanding that art which is emotional has no social issue, than art which the artist shows that he has made some thinking in the background, and which is three-dimensional bricolage, is more social because it stands in the way. And there, the whole combination was also to make a secure selection. They, for instance, didn't include the very contemporary younger people, which would be maybe more appropriate to the whole theme, like it turns out to be, which work much more with styles, which were much more postmodern in the sense. They selected too much historically, and my first positive reaction was that a few pieces and works which really were strong and were given by artists who have been here several times, like a work of Beuys or several other works which were not of the real contemporary movement, but which were by artists, and even Beuys not being here anymore to install it, has again a major work and a documenta. And so I was, what's wrong with the rest? It's for me the thinking, and that I say today at the press conference after all the talk and reply about social relevant work, that I think it's, I asked, what's your concept about that? They've excluded that it's related to European, West European interests. That's not true either. It's related to the interest of persons, people who are separated from the life, who are studying art very properly as curator and as artist in their studio thinking about society. And I don't blame this, but I think it's another perspective of society, and it's a very restricted one. And if you don't make the pretension that you are relating to the society, then it's not wrong. It's a very specific relationship to a society, the one of a very isolated person who acts within the cultural world and maybe his potential ideas about society. And in this way, it may be true, but there is a lot of things missing either. And this split of pretension and activity and presence leads that everything is very superficial, that the mixing of design, of architecture, of art is on the basis of a very big misunderstanding, because it's the misunderstanding that this is more social relevant than other things. And in the end, it turns out for me it's much more aesthetic problem than in their point of view social problem. It's the fake of construct, the fake of the world, the fake of society, and they would have to concentrate on that.
Right, well, I'm conscious of the fact I'm keeping you from your meal, so we'll talk again in a minute. Thank you. Now moving out into a large area beneath a skylight by the stairs, above which is a panel by Barbara Kruger, three paint cans, one tipping red paint, one white, one dark blue, with a caption saying, In space, no one can hear you scream. And beneath that, if I can just lean over this balcony, there's another image, which is obviously taken from a printed image to begin with, of three faces. And the caption over that, in reversed art, red, is endangered species. There's a man in the middle, and what looks like a girl on the left, and a boy on the right. Now moving into the space immediately below the platform that I've just been standing on is a rather large curved barrier by Richard Serra, which is in metal. It's about 8 feet high by a curve of about, I would have thought, 80 to 90 feet around the architecture of the inside of this stairwell area. Now I'll go to the bottom level where there's a large Mercedes-Benz sign rotating, I think, which is connected with a work by Hans Hacker, so I shall go down. Well, now in the installation, in fact, I think very impressive installation by Joseph Boyce here at Documenta. Perhaps, Ricky DeMarco, you might describe it and say what you think.
Well, I don't think there's a better description than that which was given to me of the piece by his son, Wenzel, when he said it's really lightning upside down, the impact of the forces of nature upon this stuff, which is really not just the earth, but ourselves, and all the stuff that we make to manage to survive as so-called civilized human beings. But in Joseph Boyce's view, I think that we were never allowed to be that far from the primitive condition. And this reminds us of that. It's very marvelous to see it here, such a powerful work from a man who must have known in 1985 that his days were numbered. If he was suffering from a mortal illness, then it doesn't show in this work in terms of its energy. It shows perhaps in his deep, deep love for the sacredness of stuff, of things. It's I think St. Francis would have appreciated this work. It is, in a way, a highly appropriate piece to dominate the main room overlooking the Documenta space, which I remember so well from 4 years ago, where the stones for the great trees, the oak trees, were piled high at a point where, indeed, people, the bodies of so many people who suffered during the war were piled high. And I think this work, like all great works of Boyce, is a kind of monument to humanity. If there were no human beings on the surface of the earth, you would maybe wish their presence to be recorded in something possessed of such energy and dignity. It's an enormous piece, of course. I mean, it's all dependent on that great beam holding the enormous chunk of earth or energy or lightning made static. And it's, it's not meant as a pun. I mean, it's energy held firm, just touching the floor, making you conscious of the fact that you, with your feet on the floor, you're connected with it.
Well, now we're outside in the park, beyond the orangery, within sight of the orangery. And we've just looked at a very impressive piece by Ian Hamilton Finlay, an image of which I hope we're able to reproduce on the front of this cassette publication. Perhaps you might describe it, Mike.
Yes, it's on the main avenue which runs away from the front of the orangery towards the small temple at the other end of the grounds, and consists of four guillotines. on the blades of which are etched statements from Diderot, Robespierre, Poussin, and Hamilton Finlay himself. And essentially what it seems to be saying is that one of the major features of our culture is that it is being secularized in a very radical way, which is to say that the kind of possibilities for reverence that we have traditionally had in front of the objects of culture, and indeed in front of nature, in front of the world itself, are being eroded in a very real sense, and that what we are now confronted with is a society which in many ways is almost unable to take stock, to think in front of the things that it's presented with. And Finlay is obviously saying that we should attempt in some way to return to some kind of reverence for the for culture and nature.
I think it's a very impressive piece also in that it's located or cited in a very appropriate context, between two avenues of trees, well away from the two primary exhibition sites that we've spent the last few days walking through. And it's benefited from not being close to a lot of work that in many cases confused the issue. I mean, it seemed to grow in stature because of its independence in terms of its placing.
Yes, I mean, one of the things, obviously, which Finlay is interested in and has been interested in throughout his career is gardens, is organising gardens, and the way in which gardens have been made and made to evoke certain kinds of feelings that we have and want to express. And quite obviously, this particular area that we're in at the moment is a classical example of a kind of traditional layout with axes and viewpoints and so on. And in one sense, one could be quite disappointed that in the middle of the grassed area in front of it, there is a large sculpture by Scott Burton, which, because of the foliage in the centre, blocks out the view of Finlay's piece from the orangery terrace itself. But in another way, it might kind of work to its benefit in that you have to walk round that and come right upon the work before you see it, at which point you are then able to see the texts, which are a very important part of the work, etched on the blades of the guillotines.
Well, finally, perhaps it's both inappropriate and not possible to provide any sort of real critical overview of what we've looked at over the last few days, perhaps except to say that there really isn't one that emerges with any real sense of clarity. But I certainly found the concentration and focus of both artists and artworks very rewarding and very interesting. And although you know, one goes away with all sorts of frustrations, an awful lot of issues have been raised that somehow do move various arguments forward. I wonder to some extent about the relationship between what the organisers had in mind and what the individual artists' perceptions of what they were participating in. There seemed to be a considerable dichotomy there. To what extent that's significant, I'm not sure. But I think parts of this documenta were very strong and parts of it weren't, but also there were parts of it that I think were very interesting, perhaps for future reference.
Yes, I think that what seems to come out of the discussions that we've had really is the essential fact that if one's invited to be in a show like this, then really you accept on the basis that it means that your work is going to be seen, and that any kind of agonising over whether what you particularly are doing yourself will fit into the kind of theme that the organiser has is superfluous, that actually it doesn't matter, and that in a sense if your work is going to be any good, then it's going to stand out. And there are obviously works that one's seen that do stand out and are interesting. And again, the kind of ways in which the theme has been presented by the organisers, while not necessarily being successful in the kinds of terms that one understands them to have provided points of interest.
I think the major unresolved question in my mind has to be the relationship of the design sections to the fine art or visual art sections. I think although that's, a very interesting argument in terms of what we've just experienced, I'm not sure to what extent there has been a success in that area.
Yes, I think that that is a problem. And I think that the way in which the kind of look of art, as it were, adopting the forms of functional designed objects, and the tendency of many of the designed pieces to aspire to the status of art as functionless objects, has provided, far from great clarity, a lot of confusion. And it has resulted in a kind, in many senses, a kind of orgy of superficiality that certainly many of the critics that I've spoken to over the last few days will consider to be their major task to unpick over the next few years.
Right. Well, our next major task then is to go back and edit these tapes and to try and make a coherent statement through this issue of audio arts.